Janie Lee Grace. Welcome to the Natural Health and Sobriety Show on UK Health Radio. Hi, and welcome to Hope You're Well on this incredibly rainy week. Oh God, when will it ever stop raining? A big thank you to everyone who supported me on the Strictly Come Hospice event last Friday. We had great fun. I did not win the glitter ball, sadly, but the girls who did win it were very, very well deserved. I thought it was great. And the most important thing was that we raised, I think just on the evening alone, 43,000 quid for the Rennie Grove Peace Hospice, which is just amazing, isn't it? Really incredible. But a big thanks to everyone who donated to my Just Giving. I know there were lots of podcast listeners, and it's so appreciated. Thank you. It really is. It really is nice of you. I don't know what I'll be getting up to next, but I'll let you know. We also had our Sober Coach training weekend. So, you know, busy doesn't even cover it. And that was just great. Honestly, just how amazing to be in a room with a whole bunch of people who are committed to sobriety, excited about the future, know that they want to find a new purpose. And it feels super exciting that they're going to be working with other people, other sober curious people. It was really great. It was just an amazing, amazing weekend with lots of sharing of all kinds of stuff. There was lots of laughter, lots of tears as well, in a good way. And yeah, it was just incredible. Can't wait to see the magic that some of these people create. We now move into our online sessions. And as I always say, if it is something that interests you, then join us for a webinar. We have a free webinar coming up on Thursday, the 19th of February at 7:30 p.m. UK time. So you're very welcome to register for that. If you're just curious, you know, there's absolutely no pressure. It's just a kind of exploring what it means to be a sober coach. One of the really interesting things across the weekend that I wanted to share was how interesting it is that there's always so much sort of personal transformation on these things. And at the beginning, when we start to dive into some of the stuff that we cover on the training, you can almost read, I can almost read the minds of some of the coaches, and they're thinking to themselves, oh goodness, if I admit that I don't have the perfect self-care routine, or if I admit that I've got a lot of limiting beliefs, will that mean that I can't be a coach? And, you know, the answer is absolutely not. To be a great coach does not mean that we have to be fixed, because, you know, we're not trying to fix anyone. We don't fix you if we're working with you as a coach. We enable you to explore, you know, the answers from within yourself. And so it's always great when where all of us are able to realize, you know, there's always more to be done, isn't there? There's always more to focus on. So actually this weekend in my Sober Club community, I'm kicking off my self-love challenge. So if you've been thinking about joining us in the Sober Club, now is a great time, because you get to jump into this 7-day self-love challenge. And if you're thinking, I haven't got time, then don't they always say, if you say you don't have time to meditate for an hour longer. But realistically, this self-care challenge is going to take you no more than 15 minutes a day, absolute max. And I think you'll really love it, actually. I think there's some gems in there that just help you focus. And if you just commit to doing the challenge with us, if you're part of the Sober Club, then you'll get all the goodies sent to you every day. And you can connect in our Facebook group, our private Facebook group, and share how you're getting on. And honestly, the more of us that accept and admit that we haven't got this thing cracked, of course we haven't, so we can just bring in the curiosity. And when it comes to self-love, that is the starting point. It's curiosity, because, you know, we were saying on our coach training, we can tell our clients, I can tell you guys now, you must love yourself. And that won't mean jack, will it, really? I'm sure you're aware of that. The reality is, it's really hard when you're still drinking. It's really hard to actually focus properly on authenticity and self-esteem, because it's very hard for that to coexist with effectively self-harm, which is what many of us are doing. If we're drinking, we're literally self-harming. And when you're self-sabotaging, the messages don't compute. You know, when you try to tell yourself, okay, I'm taking good care of myself. Well, you aren't really, are you? And that was what was going on for me for years and years, which is why, although I was steeped in that world and a Hay House author, and you've heard me say a lot of times, you know, I was working with all these amazing spiritual gurus, and I was talking about self-love, and I was telling everyone about the importance of it, I was not experiencing it in any way for myself. I figured it was for someone else entirely, not for the likes of me. And of course, I now realize that that's because I was drinking on a daily basis. I was poisoning myself. And when the alcohol was removed, it didn't come overnight, but I was able to become curious about just stepping into that authenticity, not being perfect, that's completely different, but just being able to recognize, okay, well, maybe there are some aspects of me that are okay then. Let's start from that place. So I really hope you'll join us in the Sober Club for the self-love challenge. We start Sunday the 8th, we run through till February the 14th, which is the perfect day to end, really, isn't it? As it's the month of love. So join us for that. And another reminder of that webinar on the 19th. And then I just have to remind you, you might have seen some stuff on social media, that this is the year that I'm celebrating the 20 years of my first book, the anniversary of my first book, Imperfectly Natural Woman. It was a number one Amazon bestseller all those years ago. So ahead of my time talking about a lot of this stuff. And I'm celebrating on Sunday, 1st of March. I'm speaking at the Wellness Way Health Hub, which is an incredible one-day event in London at the College of Naturopathic Medicine. If you go to thesoberclub.com, click on events, you'll see the link there and you can get tickets. There's a discount code as well. You can use my code imperfectly nat, imperfectly nat in capitals, and get a discount on those tickets to the Wellness Way Health Hub. Dr. Sarah Myhill is speaking too, Philly J. Lay, and a host of other people. There'll also be a marketplace with holistic health staff and some workshops. It's going to be fantastic. I'm really looking forward to it. And at the end of that day, I'm going to be hosting a special reception to celebrate 20 years of my book and to launch the Platinum Awards, which are to recognize the best in natural and holistic living. So if any of that is of interest, then message me or check out events at the Sober Club. I know that's an awful lot to think about, really, isn't it? Anyways, it is Year of the Fire Horse, as you know. I'm sure you've seen lots of stuff about this on social media. In Chinese astrology, it comes round only once every 60 years. So it's quite rare. It's very powerful. And fire horses, of course, known for their passion, independence, unstoppable energy. So this is the year when we can be, if we want to be, wild, free-spirited, and refuse to be tamed. So I love this because, in terms of thinking about sobriety and well-being, this can be a year of transformation and bold action because the energy is all about the courage and the taking risks and pursuing what truly sets you on fire. It's not about playing small, holding back. We've got to just literally move forward, move into our dreams with confidence and passion. And a lot of people are talking about how it's the perfect time for manifesting. So, of course, if we want to manifest what we want, we have to, first of all, be clear on what it is we want. We talk a lot about this in our coach training as well. So it's what do you actually want rather than what you think you should want. I've had clients sort of say to me, oh, I know I should be going to the gym and exercising, and I know I should be doing X and Y. Well, you know what? Certainly in the early weeks of sobriety, do what you want to do. Do what lifts your spirits. Do what makes your soul, feel rise and feel good. And go after that. So this fire horse sort of energy is amazing for playing out full, for really going for it rather than doing half measures. And one of the really important pieces of all of this is around decluttering. And I'm sure you've seen the social media posts like I have. It's we know, don't we, that if energy is if clutter is holding us back, we have to clear out. And the fire energy is all about clearing out the old so that we can make space for the new. I am not the best person at this, I have to tell you, but I do know, I really have a strong sense that it is the right time to release everything that's weighing us down, whether that's the physical clutter, but also the relationships that are not serving us anymore, or the old beliefs and the old patterns and just the ways we do things, definitely the limiting beliefs. Let's definitely get shot of those. The fire horse asks, what do we need to burn away so that we can run free? I love that expression, don't you? So, thinking around decluttering, because clearly I haven't done it yet, I thought rather than try to invent the wheel, I would replay part of an interview that I did similar time last year, actually. So you may well have heard this one before, but I don't think it ever he hurts to hear it again. So this is with Rachel, who is literally a decluttering expert. And I think you might really enjoy hearing this again because, you know, you're in a different space. It will land differently for you. And I am definitely going to be taking notes.
The station that makes you feel good.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movements and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
The station that makes you feel good.
So it's just so exciting to talk about this topic because I've been, you know, something that is close to my heart has been for many years. We're talking decluttering, and Rachel Smith is a house whisperer. How much do I love that name? Who helps people take back control of their homes and their lives. So, Rachel, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
No, thanks for having me.
Tell us a bit about your work then and how you came to end up doing what you do.
Well, you said about my job title of house whisperer.
Yeah.
Which is something that I completely made up myself, mainly for networking purposes. Because, you know, when it's the usual blah blah, people just switch off, don't they? So I was like, right, I'm going to invent something that's going to make people stop and go, oh, tell me more about that then.
Yeah.
And it works an absolute treat. It's brilliant. But also, it is kind of, you know, you have horse whisperers who speak the language of the horse. Mm. And I am a house whisperer that kind of does speak the language of the house. I am a linguist by trade. And I think that's where it comes from. Being a foreign person in a foreign land, I've had to understand better how people communicate with the said and the unsaid and the body language and everything that's within them that you have to try and get out of them. And so that's kind of translated itself literally into what I do now, which is, you know, people have been through lots of different life-changing events, or they may be neurodivergent, or they may be sober, or they may just have had a really difficult time with their family, with their jobs, whatever that is. It tends to translate itself into the home. So your home can actually tell stories when you're not saying anything.
Yeah.
So it is kind of, there is a bit of the whispering in it. I don't know whether it's become a self-fulfilling prophecy where I've said that's what I do and therefore it is. But yeah, it was born out of redundancy during COVID, as I'm sure a lot of people can identify with. And my husband said to me, well, you've always wanted to do something with houses, so why do you do that? And I was like, oh, okay then, I'll just set up my own business in COVID, because that's a really good idea. And I thought I just made my own job up, basically, because I didn't want to get back into the corporate hamster wheel. You know, I've been there, done that, got the T-shirt, worked for narcissistic, horrible people. And I was just like, I'm going to try working for myself. And it was really the further along the journey that I went, the more I realized that there were so many people who were stuck and overwhelmed by life and therefore by their homes, and that their homes had really started controlling them, which is a really absurd notion that four brick walls can start controlling you. But when other things have gone on in your life, you stop making decisions and you stop living life intentionally, and you start being at the mercy of the things that are around you, the inanimate objects that you are surrounded with. And so I realized quite quickly that what was driving me was not to make the spaces look prettier. It was to help the people gain more headspace and to help them move on into the next sort of chapter of their life and sort of close a door on the past and what they've been through and give them hope and motivation to open a door to their new future.
Yeah, it is really interesting, isn't it, how our home environment, you know, impacts literally on our mental health and well-being. And I know for sure that when I've had lots of clients that they stop drinking, they find they've got a bit more time on their hands. And if they're able to sort of harness the energy and the wherewithal, they can blitz stuff and they can go for it, you know, and it's incredible. The transformation can be literally incredible from being stuck sort of mentally and physically almost.
Yeah, because we all suffer from house blindness, because we are just surrounded by the same things every day. We see the same things and so we stop seeing them.
Yeah.
And it's only when you do something which helps you regain clarity, like becoming sober, then you see things through a different lens and you start realizing, you know, all your emotions are coming back, and, you know, your home is just a big bag of emotions because it's inhabited by humans and we are all just emotional beings. And so, you know, there's energy in your home that you can influence by changing things around, and you can, you know, just by changing your pictures from room to room or by moving your plants from room to room, you can totally change how that space feels. And when you've stopped drinking and you've got, like we say, the clarity, you've got a bit more headspace, you've got time, energy, money, you know, it's really the holy grail is that particular situation means that you are in a space where you can make the changes.
Yeah.
And change will help you because it will stop stopping the previous habits, you know, changing where you do things and where you look for things and where you go to do things. It all helps with this sort of new chapter of your life.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, on paper, I 100% agree with everything you just said, and you know, I've even written about clutter clearing in previous books that I've written and the importance of it and how it, you know, frees up space and everything. But you know, I hereby admit that I have got a real block. I really have. I've got an absolute block on certain. There are certain kind of areas within my home that it's. I've literally got something going on, and I don't know what the hell it is, but I can't seem to do it. So what do you do with people like me who literally, it's a very strange feeling.
Yeah, and it's literally everybody, because, you know, we're all been through this journey that we call life, and things have happened to all of us. You know, we've all had different experiences, be they positive, negative, whatever, and we've all gone through different phases of life and different transitions, and we've all been different people at different stages in life. And the areas that you're stuck with will contain what I call cupboard demons, which are little balls of negative energy, which relate to something in your past that you need to get past in order to move forwards. And so these things can be, well, there's a myriad of things that it could be. Things that I've found have been, like, a big thing is a wedding dress. That particular wedding dress was from an abusive marriage. There have been court papers from divorce proceedings. There's been bank statements from where investments have gone horribly wrong. You know, all these things that people are holding on to because they think they should, or because more often than not, they don't know how to get rid of them. And it's a different thing holding on to something as to not knowing how to get rid of it.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
And so in those areas, whatever they may be, there will be some relic of the past. And it may seem at first glance insignificant. But when you start talking about what that thing is, then you tell its story and you give yourself permission to let it go. And it may be that somebody else, if it's an item, say if it's something you've been given by somebody you don't particularly like, or you've been left something, somebody that's passed away, but you don't like it, then you have to give yourself permission to let it go on its another journey.
Yeah, and give it away.
Not to think of necessarily throwing things away. I think we get sort of caught up with this idea of throwing things away, and it's not. It's letting things go on an onward journey.
Yeah.
And when you reframe it in that way, then you can imagine that somebody else may love that item. And the negative energy associated with it is yours. And it's not that you're going to pass it on. Negative energy will evaporate as soon as you've let it go.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's about confronting these cupboard demons, no matter how big or how small. Maybe doing it with a friend, somebody you trust, to help you just meet it head on, discuss it, and then let it go.
The minute
that you've let it go, all of a sudden you'll be able to do so many things.
Yeah, I really believe that. It frees up space.
Not just around the decluttering, but around relationships, around money, around, you know, lots of things in your life.
Yeah, I really love that, and that's a really great way of looking at it. Those kind of cupboard demons, as you say. But what you're talking about there is that what I call sort of long term storage. You know, your the wedding dress in the attic, or the piles of papers, or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, etc. But what about the everyday clutter? Because sometimes for me that can be even harder. So I'll have kind of a blitz. And completely clear my nightmare desk. And within a ridiculously short space of time, it will be just as bad as it was before. I mean, it's literally as though it grows again. I swear to God. It's really, I actually do not know how people, it must be a different kind of breed of person that can keep stuff neat.
It absolutely is. And there are so many reasons why we are how we are. Some of it is learned behavior.
Yeah.
Some of it is behavior that we haven't learned or we haven't been taught.
That's a good point. I was certainly never ever taught how to tidy, clean, keep a space nice. I never was.
Yeah. People assume it's something that we learn as children growing up.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you can only learn it if somebody teaches you it.
Yeah, it's true.
And it depends on the learned experience of your parents or guardians. As to if that is transmitted to you or not.
Right.
And quite often it isn't. And this thing called adulting is quite difficult.
Yeah, even at my age.
when you think back, you know, to the 1950s, there were lessons in school.
Yes, there was, there was,
you know, home economics was home economics, just that.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was about, you know, bookkeeping, and it was about cooking, and cooking, it was about
cleaning,
whatever.
Yeah.
And as we've gone on through the decades, we've got more machines that do things for us. Yes. So in theory, it all should be easier. But we've got zero time and zero energy.
Yeah.
And so the whole concept of tidying and being tidy is something that almost needs to be relearned or retaught or both, because we take it for granted that people know how to do it and they really, really don't. And then if you add in some kind of neurodivergence, or you add in a mental health issue or depression, anxiety, just general life, it makes it really difficult.
Yeah.
And so, again, it's not necessarily cupboard demons, but it starts with the cupboards and the drawers.
Right.
Because you can't tidy away what's surface clutter if what's inside everything is full of stuff.
Yeah, true. I've got nowhere to tidy to. That's exactly true. Yeah.
And nobody wants to start emptying the cupboards and the drawers, because that's a really crap thing to do. So it's just, you have to put the hard work in. You know, there are lots of declutterers who go, oh, yes, just do 5 minutes a day and just choose like a drawer a day and all of that kind of business. For me, it's all about going deep and getting your hands dirty, spending the time, diarising it, making time with yourself to do yourself the biggest favour you can do yourself.
So where would you start then, if you don't think you should start with a drawer? Where would one start?
All the drawers. it's a space.
But you are going to run out of time, aren't you, then? Depending on how much you've got.
But that's it. But you have to allocate yourself a decent enough amount of time to tackle the space that you've given yourself. So if it is a chest of drawers, then you need to be giving yourself at least an hour. You're not going to do that in 5 minutes.
Mm.
If it's a whole room, like I can do a whole room in 4 hours. But that's because it's me and because I'm not the person whose stuff it is.
Mm.
So if you're doing it yourself, obviously it takes much longer because I'm not there like with a big stick going, go on, go on. And it's, you know, you go down memory lane and you get all emotional about things and then you find it difficult to make decisions. And it's, you need somebody that at the very least can help you be accountable for it.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
An accountability buddy where you can say, right, I'm about to tackle this.
Yeah, so if you hold up that jumper.
See where I am.
Yeah, exactly. If you hold up that jumper that no longer fits you, it was shrunk in the wash, but it's got little bunnies on that you used to quite like. Yeah. You kind of need someone else to go, sweetheart, you're never going to wear it.
But you also just need to be realistic. You know yourself, you know, what you're likely to be like. And so you need to just have strict rules in place. Do you love it? Do you use it? That's the only thing you need.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't love it or use it, then what's it doing?
It is very interesting, though, isn't it, with all of this? Because what comes in is all these, you know, as you say, there can be demons, there can be trauma, there can be old stuff, but there can also be that sort of poverty consciousness. And, you know, I know I've had a lot of that in my past, because, you know, we had nothing growing up, nothing.
Yeah.
And so there, I catch myself kind of thinking, oh, but I spent a lot of money on that.
Yeah.
And that would be so wasteful if I, you know, if I chuck it or, you know, I might need it one day. It's that poverty consciousness and I won't have enough money to buy it again, you know?
Yeah. Oh, no, for sure. And that affects absolutely everybody. And to that, I would say, well, if it's about the money, then you have to realize that the money went the minute that you bought.
Yeah, true. You're not going to get it back by hanging on.
And it's okay to make money from things. You can sell things and that's absolutely fine. But again, you just need to be realistic about if you're actually going to do it or you're just going to say you do it and then it stays there for another 6 months.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Exactly. But then on that...
Again,
sorry, carry on.
There are people that do this for a living. There are people that list things on Vinted, on eBay or whatever, and they take a percentage. It's like, give it to them. Enroll your kids to do it. You know, just anybody, just get somebody to help you do it. And it's okay to claw back that money, it is. But you need the headspace more. So at some point, you have to draw the line under the money and say, I just need that out of my life so that I can just move on.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. Thank you.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Dec, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Because the getting rid part, you know, it is a big part of this. And as you say, you can find someone to help you sell it or whatever. That's one piece of it. But even getting rid of stuff, you know, as in rubbish. I mean, I don't know if I'm the only person who struggles with this, but I'll have, you know, it's so much rubbish that your regular, you know, guys are not going to take it. And so then I've got to drive to a recycling center and separate everything. And that drives me bonkers, you know, or if I'm taking stuff to a charity shop, invariably I'll gather the bags up and then they'll sit in the car for 3 weeks.
or they'll just sit in your house for 6 months.
Yeah, exactly.
The same, but it's like you haven't done the work if it hasn't left your house.
Yeah, true.
And there's always that temptation that you're going to go back in the bags and get stuff out again because it's like, oh, well, I actually want that. And and that is the same with absolutely everybody. And again, I would say the key to it is diarising. Make a meeting with yourself, put it as a task to go to the charity shop or to go to the tip or to go to wherever. Because as long as you're saying, I'll do it later, later will never come because there'll always be something better to do. As I was saying before, getting rid of stuff is a blocker for a lot of people because there are a lot of people who are eco-conscious. They don't just want to send stuff to the landfill. They don't want to send stuff to just any old charity shop because they're totally overrun as well. And so what I would say to that is look for charities close to you who collect things to give to people who actually really need them. Giving to Source instead of just having it in a shop.
Absolutely.
And when I've spoken to people about doing that, it actually makes it easier for to let things go because they know that they're actually going to a person with a name and a face and they know that they're actually helping somebody.
Yeah, no, it's so true. I saw somebody in my local area, in my kind of local Facebook group, was collecting coats. Obviously, it's freezing at the moment. For a specific, I forget exactly what it was, might have been a homeless charity. And just that sort of glimmer actually made me go and get five coats that I didn't need. Five coats in my cupboard that we don't need as a family. All complete, really good condition, but just because I had a definite place for them, it did make a difference.
I do collections for various places. I did one for a women's refuge And as soon as I put the thing out on my local Facebook and my local WhatsApp groups and what have you, it was like people just dropping stuff off every 5 minutes because you're giving people a purpose and you're giving them a reason to do it.
Well, it's an act of kindness, isn't it? And we all like doing those. I love that. That's really powerful. Can you, I know you've already said it, but can you tell me a bit more? Can you just go over again the benefits of doing this for our sort of mental health and well-being? I tell you why, because as we're talking, I'm realizing that there are so many similarities here, you know, in my life particularly, between this and what was going on for me, you know, when I was still drinking. You know, I knew that something had to change. I knew, of course I did. I knew for bloody years that something had to change. And I would, you know, occasionally reach out, but then not do anything and then carry on, then just leave it and then procrastinate for a few more months or years. And now, you know, I look back and I think, oh God, you know, why did I leave it so long? Why? Just why? Why didn't more people tell me just how amazing life is once you've made this decision? And I think there's a real similarity here because I can really sense that if I could just grasp that light at the end of the tunnel, I might be able to do this, what for me is massive.
Oh, absolutely. And it's massive for everybody. And this is part of my mission, is to get people just talking about the state of their homes, because we live in this insta-perfect society where everybody feels the pressure that they've got to have this and that and their home must look amazing all the time. And that's just not real life. Like, all my clients say to me, oh, you must live in a palace. It's like, well, no, I've got a husband, two kids, a dog. We both work full time. It's like, yes, I don't have loads and loads of stuff, but everyday life means that things get messy, and that's okay. It's just having the tools and knowing when enough is enough. And what's in your home is in your head, and what's in your head is in your home. So all the things that you are surrounding yourself with are taking up valuable headspace. And that is the single most important thing to understand, that we can live with very, very little. And you know when you, you're sitting in your lounge and you're like, oh God, it's a bit of a mess, I'm just going to have a tidy up, and you have a quick tidy up, and then you sit down and you go, and you breathe, and you actually breathe, and you actually relax. And there are so many people who are not breathing because their environment is causing them anxiety on a daily basis, and it is overwhelming them on a daily basis. As soon as they pull up their car, they're getting out the car, the blood pressure's going up, the heartbeat's going up, and they're just, their shoulders are going up, and they're just feeling trapped before they've even got in the front door. And so in order to create a sanctuary, which we all love and we all deserve, we need to get rid of the unnecessary and the unwanted, because looking after your home is a form of self-care. And especially as women, we don't do that enough anyway. But I just want people to know that if you look after your home, and if you create a home which reflects the person that you are now, then you will be the best version of you. If you have a home, and I always say, if you want to take a look at the state of somebody's mental health, then look at their house and it'll tell you everything you need to know.
And I guess just to chip in,
everybody
there,
starts cringing at that point. It's like, oh God.
I get that, but just to chip in there, you're not saying though that everyone's home has to be minimalist and or any specific way, right? Because we're all very different. Yeah.
Okay. No.
So when you say look at the state,
what makes you happy?
Yeah.
And that is something that's internal, and that is personal to every single person, because I've learned that clutter means very different things to different people.
Mm.
And to some people, it means knee deep in newspapers. To other people, it means that the inside of their cupboards are not organized, so nothing makes sense. And so they've got a problem not in the cupboards. But to anybody else looking at their house, they would think, oh, you know, this is a nice house. It's a bit untidy, but there's nothing much going on here. It's not a problem. But to that person, it's a major problem.
Yeah,
and
exactly,
it's meaning that they're not letting people in through the front door because they're embarrassed about how they're living.
I mean, the parallel there is exactly the same with us guys who were drinking, because you know, I and no one looking at me when I was drinking knew that I had any kind of a problem, because it didn't manifest in any way, certainly not in front of anyone else. I didn't go to, you know, I never had a hangover, I didn't go to work drunk, I didn't drive a car, nobody else knew, but I knew because I woke up at 3 a.m. every morning feeling like absolute shit. So that's how it was impacting on my life. And similarly with the kind of, you know, there are several areas of my home that other people would, you know, probably think they're perfectly great. But there are, you know, there are some spaces where pretty much every single day I kind of despair at the mess I'm in.
And going back to what you were saying about, you know, living in a, you know, minimalist house, and whatever, it's absolutely not that. It's living in a house that represents you. And it's understanding how to create something that it represents you, which is really, really hard, because it does take some self-interrogation. It does take just asking yourself those questions about where have I been my happiest and why? What did that actually physically look like? You know, what were the colours that I was surrounded by? What were the textures? What were the smells? What were the sounds? And it's your home should, you should be using all of your senses in your home all the time. It's not just a visual thing. It's how you feel in the space. So everything around your home should be how you feel. And then you need to kind of understand how you can create that atmosphere and that ambience, which, you know, is not easy for a lot of people.
I mean, presumably you would say there are ways of doing this where you don't have to spend a fortune. I mean, everyone's going to have different homes, aren't they? There might be people who are living in a very small space because, you know, it's relatively temporary or whatever. But you can still make your space feel good for you, however tiny, I suppose.
Absolutely. And it's not about spending lots of money. It's about making it look like it's your home. Like I always say, I should be able to go through your home like Lloyd Grossman and say, hey, I know it's Janie because I can see, I know where she goes on holiday. I know what books she likes reading. I know what music she likes listening to. I know what fragrances she likes. And it should tell me who you are without you being there. Yeah. You know, I should be able to describe you from your home. And I think there's a lot of people don't pay enough attention to that, that they're too busy copying what other people are doing on Instagram and just transposing it into their own home. And it's like, you're looking for the Holy Grail, but you're looking in all the wrong places because the Holy Grail is in here. And you have to know who you are to be able to express yourself within your home.
Yeah, I love it. And that's why it links so brilliantly to why so many people, once they've ditched the booze, are ready to do this, because you do get that sense of authenticity back. You do start to find out who you really are. And that's so, you know, it's the perfect time to do it, actually.
And it's, you know, sober people probably more than anyone, because they are asking themselves all these questions.
Yeah, exactly.
And they are wondering,
digging
who
deep.
Am I now?
Yeah, yeah.
And your home has to represent the you of now, not the you of five years ago, 10 years ago, whatever. That doesn't serve you, because we all change, the relationships in a household change. You know, you might move house, you get new jobs, and things are constantly evolving. But if your home doesn't evolve with you, then you end up with a disconnect.
Yeah.
And that's when a lot of people move, because they've fallen out of love with their home. And instead of asking themselves all these questions, like, what do I need from my home? What do I want to be able to do there? And who am I going to do it with? And how am I going to do it? They just go, oh, we haven't got enough space, we need to move. Hmm. But you're taking you and your emotional baggage with you.
Yeah,
and you will just recreate the same
problems.
Because you're not addressing the issues, and the issues are in here. I think there's a lot of people in COVID moved when they didn't need to.
Right. So for those people who, I'm guessing, if you've, you know, if you've got, if you know you've got one area of major clutter in your life, then you know your advice would be, well, diarize it and start there. But what if, like me, you're kind of in overwhelm and you've got, you know, several areas and you know, not just old, not just long-term clutter, but kind of daily clutter, you know, building up. What's the top tip for getting started? Because the biggest thing for me is I go all guns, say, yeah, I'm going to do it, and then, you know, procrastinate because there's always something more important, seemingly. So where do I start?
I think if you're in a situation where it is totally overwhelming, you don't know where to start, then you just need somebody to help you because you're just going to go around in circles. And you know, even something like a chat like this can unlock doors because there will be, you can obviously get into the specifics of what it is in those areas that's stopping you. Because it's all about giving yourself permission to let stuff go. And you're saying, yes, it's the everyday clutter. It's not necessarily the long term, but it's the long term
It will
that's
be the
what's
long term as well.
important.
Yeah, absolutely right.
Yeah, so I would definitely, you definitely need to speak to a specialist. And obviously, you know, there's all kinds of stuff online that you can access, but it needs to be specific to you, because we're all different and we've all got different histories and we've all got different traumas going on. And it's, yeah, you need somebody to listen and you need somebody to help you give yourself permission to let stuff go.
It's really true. So tell us where we can find you then. What services do you offer, Rachel, and where can we find your work?
Yeah, so I offer an Empower Hour, which is exactly what I've just said. Basically, it's just an hour
Talking through
long
it.
online chat with me to give you a shoulder to cry on whilst giving you a kick up the backside. Because that's what we all need, really. So I've been contracted by clients who said, "Well, you know, we got you because you weren't too nice. We knew you wouldn't let us get away with this." I also offer a clutter club, which is an online support group where we do a room a month, two online sessions, and then like a WhatsApp group so everybody can support everybody else. I also have obviously in-person sessions, which is really just in Yorkshire because it's, you know, it's, there are other local declutterers I'm sure you can find. And I also offer fuller consultations and empathic interior design because, you know, it all goes hand in hand. It's all about creating a sanctuary. So it's about getting rid of the stuff first and then making it more you afterwards.
Yeah, great. And just give us your website again, Rachel.
Clutteristheenemy.co.uk.
Great name. Fantastic. Thank you. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
No, it's been great. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to the Natural Health and Sobriety Show on UK Health Radio.